Absolutely. Having a bank that can handle a big project really helps, because some banks aren't tailored to handle big business, and they can handle the big business for sure. They have no limitations to what they can do for your business.
I do my business banking and my personal banking with them.
Both.
Absolutely.
You're double dipping.
You bet.
Above and Beyond Banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Some technical glitches with the Space Shuttle Discovery may delay tomorrow night's scheduled launch. A decision will be made later today. Health officials in the Northeast may be getting closer to pinpointing the cause of a E. coli outbreak, which has affected Taco Bell customers in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. Company has ordered that green onions be removed from its 5,800 restaurants nationwide after preliminary testing found that they contained a strain of E. coli, but they are cautioning that they're not sure this is what caused the outbreak. Five of the country's biggest employers will soon be offering their workers a new health care benefit, individual electronic medical records that they can take when they travel or visit their doctors or change jobs. The information will be stored in a database that only the employee can access. The five companies are Walmart, Pitney Bowes, Intel, BP America, and Applied Materials. Merck is standing by its forecast of flat earnings for this year, but slightly higher results in 2007. That's in line with expectations from Wall Street. Daimler Chrysler reports that global sales for its Mercedes vehicles rose 5% last month, and for the first time ever, Toyota says it plans next year to produce more cars overseas than it does in Japan. Gold is trading at $642.70 an ounce at this hour. Silver's at $13.97, and light sweet crude down just a penny at $62.44 a barrel. On Wall Street, all the markets are lower. The Dow down 19, NASDAQ is down 7, and the S&P 500 is down.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. The day after the November elections, the headline in Europe was not Democrats take over Congress, but Don Rumsfeld resigns as defense secretary. In fact, you could almost hear the music in European capitals. Ding dong, the witch is dead. It's really probably not an exaggeration to say there was some rejoicing in the streets. And in this country, from sea to shining sea, Democrats are relieved. After all, they had called for Rumsfeld's resignation for several years now. And even Republicans seemed somewhat pleased that there was going to be a change in the war in Iraq. But not so fast. The replacement for Don Rumsfeld is a man by the name of Robert Gates, a man who went flying through the Senate Armed Services Committee just yesterday and is expected to get an easy nomination to replace Don Rumsfeld. One reason for his success? Well, when one of his main critics, the person who's going to chair the Senate Armed Services Committee, the ranking member, Senator Carl Levin of Michigan, someone who's normally very tough on oversight, when he asked Robert Gates, quote, "Mr. Gates, do you believe that we are currently winning in Iraq?" Gates surprised everyone. He answered, "No, sir." Senators were taken aback. They had never heard such honesty from a Bush nominee before. He actually admitted that we were not winning the war in Iraq. He actually contradicted what Bush said in October 25th, not even 2 months ago, when he said, quote, Bush saying, "Absolutely, we're winning." The senators were astounded to hear such honesty from Robert Gates, who vowed he would be independent. And so a chorus of praise was given by both Republicans and Democrats to Robert Gates. Chairman John Warner said, "We're very pleased." Carl Levin said, "Very, very pleased." John McCain said, "We're very grateful." Pat Roberts said, "We're very proud, very enthusiastic, and very happy." Now, I'll be the first to admit that a chimpanzee could do a better job as defense secretary than Don Rumsfeld. But maybe we should take a closer look at his replacement. After all, one of the main problems with the Bush administration is, as they said in the Downing Street memo, this is an administration that fixes the facts around the policy. We've seen time and time again from everyone like Richard Clark and Paul O'Neill to well, all the lies told to get us into war in Iraq, right? A curveball in Germany and the aluminum tubes. And we've seen an administration that has been fixing the facts around the policy. We've seen George Tenet tell the president it's a slam dunk when the information was anything but a slam dunk. We have a bunch of yes men and a few women in the White House telling the president what he wants to hear. The question is, would Robert Gates be any different? And unfortunately, his long history suggests he may not be. To answer this question, would Robert Gates be different? Would he be a yes man or would he not be? I've invited a really special guest. His name is Ray McGovern. He was a CIA analyst for 27 years, beginning his career under John F. Kennedy and ending it under George H.W. Bush. He has written an article in the Miami Herald called An Insider's Look, a CIA's Insider's Take on Gates. Ray McGovern, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you, Mark.
Well, let's start with who Robert Gates is. His history, we mostly know it from the Iran-Contra affair, but is he someone who, in essence, will fix the facts around the intelligence?
Well, I'm afraid he is. We've got the book on Bobby Gates. He soared to fame when he found out that the new director in 1981, William Casey, was inclined to see a Soviet under every rock. And Gates found two under every rock, and anyone who found two or more were automatically promoted. Now, I exaggerate, but only by a little. Okay, what happened there was that people who were serious observers of the Soviet Union, who, for example, were reluctant to ascribe to the Soviets every terrorist event that happened in the world, those people were anathema to Casey and therefore Gates. They were shunted aside in favor of more malleable analysts who could sniff the prevailing wind, so to speak, and trim their analytical sails accordingly. So what happened, really, and bringing it down to this day, starting in 1982, really, when Gates became Deputy Director for Intelligence and then Deputy Director for the whole intelligence community, starting then, the practice of corrupting intelligence analysis to suit the perceived wishes of Ronald Reagan or other hardliners, that started to be institutionalized. And the way you institutionalize something like that is you pick the people who are willing to cooperate in order to get ahead, and you make them branch chiefs and division chiefs. And so 10 years later, when George Tenet, who was head of the CIA in 2002, when he came back from the White House in September of 2002 and told his managers, we have to do an estimate on weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, how many there are, where they are, and so forth, and we have to do it in 3 weeks because Karl Rove wants this done a month before the midterm elections. And incidentally, our conclusions have to come out the way Dick Cheney said the situation is in that big speech he gave on the 26th of August 2002. Now, in our day, in my day, if a director came back and assembled us around the conference room and told us that, we would say, George, you're kidding. And if we found out that he was serious, I can assure you we would have got up and left that room because we didn't do that kind of stuff. We didn't do it. We told it like it was, okay? But after 20 years of this, what I call institutionalized corruption, politicization, he had a set of people around there that said, sure, we can do that. 3 weeks, no problem. And out of that issued the very worst national intelligence estimate that the U.S. intelligence community has ever, ever produced.
About the one of 2002 that said that when 2001 didn't even mention Iraq, 2002 suddenly made Iraq the greatest threat to the United States.
Yeah, with all kinds of chemical and biological weapons and embarking on their nuclear program, da-da-da-da-da-da. It was all there, And it's all used very cynically to trick our elected representatives in the Congress out of their constitutional prerogative to declare or otherwise authorize war. And so we had not only the corruption of the intelligence analysis process, which is bad enough and which we feel acutely, we alumni intelligence professionals, but we had, we tend to be conservative as well. And here we were watching the prostitution of our profession to deliberately deceive our elected representatives in the Congress out of their constitutional responsibility to decide on war and peace. And that was a constitutional crisis. So we,
Mr. McGovern, my viewers are pretty well aware of the fixing the facts around the intelligence with the WMDs and
good.
Iraq in 2002. When we come back from break, I want to talk about Robert Gates and specific things that he has done that would suggest that, unfortunately, he's kind of cut from the same mold of yes men that led us into this war in Iraq. If you want to call in, folks, and ask a question of my guests, feel free to do so. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime.
Okay. Is this the first movie reference of the night? Well, not, well, Foster Brooks, kind of. Everybody here, and I'm sure all the hands are going to go up. You know, this is just like Romper Room and the Doobie. I can see your hands, okay? Brazil, the movie, Renegade Plumbers, okay? And this ties into something else I wanted to make mention of because it's something that sort of conflicts me. In Brazil, there was a renegade plumber played by, was it played by Robert De Niro? I think so. Love the movie, but you know, society grown into a plutocracy, much as Charlie was describing, where, you know, getting a you had to have a pirate plumber. Are we gonna have to have pirates on the internet? I guess I'm gonna have to get all curious and learn how to trace my route. Even as I speak, someone is typing me an email telling me how. Ooh, I didn't even have to get out the crystal ball. I just know you guys are that sharp. Whew, read the book. I'm sure, you know, everything, this goes straight into the stream, and before it ever gets to our streaming servers, I'm sure it's been through the NSA. Hey, Fred, eat me. I'm sorry. Yeah, see, Agnes wins flies with sugar. I throw vinegar.
Fred, don't pay any attention to him. Come join the party. We know that you've had a lot of budget cuts and you're under a lot of stress. You know, you don't even have to tell us who you are. Just call in, vent, get it out. We're here for you, man.
It's a rotten job you got, Fred, spying on your own fellow Americans. It can't make you feel good at the end of the day. No, but renegade plumbers, we're gonna have to do something to stop the spying. I don't know what that something is, because I want the internets to continue, and I don't want Ted Stevens clogging up the tubes. But there is another story that's out there that might be worth 7 minutes or so before we take our bottom of the hour break. Hey, how many other talkers are there out there that actually have the ability to go on without a break? You know, most talk show hosts are glad when the commercial comes around because it's a chance to get up, move around, maybe go to the little talk show host room. No. Not yet. I think she needs a little producer's room. But no, the story that came out of New York today, and it gives me a little case of the creeps. The city of New York has banned trans fats. Now, we are not talking about fat guys in dresses, okay? We're talking about the mono and diglycerides and, you know, partially hydrogenated palm cotton or palm cotton seed or soy oil. If you take an oil and you blow a lot of hydrogen through it, this is a simplified version, you can make a solid out of it. Anything from Crisco to stuff that's inside your candy bar. For all I know, it's in my peach knee-high. But the thing is, it melts at certain temperatures and then it re-solidifies at others. And it will operate as a solid at room temperature, and it will operate as a solid in you. And the city of New York, the New York City Board of Health, voted today to make New York the nation's first city to ban trans fats, partially hydrogenated oils. And that means everything from the corner pizzeria to big-time bakeries, restaurants, bodegas. The restaurant industry is saying that the ban was burdensome and unnecessary. And of course, when it says the restaurant industry says that means some paid flack bastard who doesn't contribute anything to our economy. Just as Charlie was saying, you know, there's people in this country who don't do anything and get rich not doing it. This guy is doing nothing. This girl, this woman, is doing nothing but sitting out there trying to encourage people to do things that are otherwise bad for them. And yet, by the same token, there's something troubling about this, because any time you enact a prohibition, you get a black market backlash. And I've got this vision of some guy in a trench coat outside an elementary school going, "Hey, kid, I got some parquet. Want some shed spread?" No, man, this is good Crisco. No, it ain't been cut. This is the good Crisco. Hey, kid, these French fries were fried in partially hydrogenated, wait for it, palm kernel oil. Yeah, I said palm kernel oil. Hey, kid, the first one's free, okay? And, you know, what? You go to the restaurant 10 years from now in New York and you have to give the special knock. And the little door opens up. And you got to say, "I hear the coconuts are dropping this time of year." And the guy behind the door says, "Only in the southern latitudes." "Okay, come on in." And you get to go in and you eat stuff with trans fats in them. I am sure that when this story gets around to being addressed, probably tomorrow or the next day or so, by Flush Flimball, he will scream that freedom in America is dying because the liberals, my friends, the liberals in New York City have decided that you no longer have the freedom to choose what it is you want to eat. I told you years ago when the tobacco litigation began that it would begin with tobacco, but pretty soon they would be telling you what could go on your table. Again, no crystal ball. Just common sense. Anybody you ask will tell you that that trans fats are pure poison. And this, you know, poster child! By virtue of my Scottish heritage, I store, biologically speaking, I store lipids and cholesterols and triglycerides. I watched a doctor look at my blood test results one time, and the blood drained entirely out of his face when he saw my triglyceride levels. And he goes, we got to do this again, dude. Your triglycerides are 700. This has got to be a mistake. And I went, no, that's low.
You're going to be dead.
He goes, we got to get you on a pill. But, you know, my people stored fats because they lived in northern latitudes. You know, us and the Eskimos. But this stuff is poison. It doesn't exist in nature. In many ways, you're better off eating butter than you are eating buttery, shed-spread country crock. Crock of what? But I just, I wonder, and again, it's part of that clueless in America thing Charlie identified so expertly. That government regulation was unnecessary, or would have been unnecessary, if it weren't. This is all created. This is the matter of bringing the snakes to Hawaii to get rid of the rats, and then you got to bring the mongooses to get rid of the snakes, and then you got to get something in there to get rid of the mongooses. This is that. We have to have a law to get rid of the trans fats because we are so thoroughly consumerized that we find it impossible to stand on our feet in this system and demand of our corporate suppliers that they quit freaking poisoning us. Dear sir, please stop poisoning me. You ever buy Campbell's Healthy Request soup? No, with lower fat, or how about Ritz crackers, the low fat version? You know what you get because they're not putting any flat. You know, the French in cooking school they've got a little saying. It's like a mantra. I mean, you don't get to start boiling water until you can say it nicely, and it's something like le gras et la flavor. The fat is flavor. Look at the ingredient list on a box of Snitz crackers or the Keebler Crack House wafers or whatever. Look at the ingredients list and you'll see on the low-fat version, oh, sure, they've taken out half the fat. They replaced it with twice as much salt because it don't taste worth it. It's like eating cardboard. Jesus. You know, meanwhile, across town, you can go to the little international market, get the frozen Indian flatbread, and it's better than anything that Nabisco ever put out. And not half as rotten for you. I don't want to eat no Indian food. Jesus. You know, so this is where we are. We've got to have a law because restaurants can't be persuaded to stop poisoning their patrons. They won't do it voluntarily. Remember, you know, that voluntary regulation that the dear leader was talking about? Well, what we're going to have is a system of credits. And big polluters can trade credits with small polluters because the small polluters aren't polluting anyway. And we'll have voluntary compliance inside the industry. Horse hockey. Bug spray. Tell it to the Marines. It don't work. So in the absence of a workable system, a workable voluntary system on the part of industry, you find yourself with a law that says the Board of Health voted Tuesday to make New York the nation's first city to ban artery-clogging artificial trans fats at restaurants. And all the sons of bitches had to do was just say, hey, we're not going to use this poison anymore. No, they had to be told to, because they are more interested in money than they are in people. And it's no different with the Restaurant Owners Association than it is with the tobacco lobby. Really. So we'll take a break, and we'll run with it downhill to 9 o'clock Eastern Time. If you want to jump in the conversation, please feel free to do so. 877-443-2366 is the number. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Email to Bob at headonradio.com. My new favorite song. I'm Bob Kincaid. Still find time of an evening to go fishing on the river, put a fence around my land. Be the story to my baby, I'm a West Virginia man. I work in a sawmill 8 hours a day. Eat supper, read the paper, put up 100 bales of hay. Run off a batch of moonshine, relax next to the fan. Chew the back, I sing a fine song, I'm a West Virginia man. West Virginia man. All right.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. 600 SEIU nurses have been locked out and are on the picket lines at two hospitals in Las Vegas in a contract renewal dispute. SEIU's Chris Coyle says nurses agreed not to strike for a 30-day cooling-off period, but were locked out Monday morning by Universal Health Services. Teamsters president James Hoffa says he'll use the next 5 years to concentrate Teamster efforts on organizing and strengthening contracts that protect pensions, wages, and health benefits. Hoffa says organizing is the key to have the power to be effective across the range of other labor issues.
Organizing and doing things like raising the minimum wage, passing the Employee Free Choice Act, working on national health care, making sure we have port security, making sure people have good, strong pensions. Those are our goals nationally.
Some UPS workers are unhappy with their contracts over pension and health benefits issues. Hoffa says he'll work to strengthen pensions and health care in the new UPS contracts, but he says Teamster pension plans are strong.
That fund we're very proud of has paid out over $37 billion since 1955, and there isn't one person that's ever missed a pension check. And what we've got to do is to negotiate, you know, more money into that plan and work on getting a better contract, more security with regard to pensions and health care.
With Walmart employees feeling more and more powerless, the company has adopted a new program to try and win them back. Jesse Russell has more.
In recent months, the world's largest retail company has embarked on a new profit-saving mission, a mission that includes using more part-time workers, capping wages, and stiffer penalties for unpaid days off. The plan has created outrage amongst many employees, and demonstrations have even broken out at some Walmart stores around the country. According to the New York Times, the company has adopted a new program intended to show the employees that the corporation still cares. Managers of the Walmart store will meet with 10 workers each week to hear their concerns. In addition, store managers can extend the 10% employee discount to an additional 10% on a single item in the store during the holiday period. The program also includes a special polo shirt for employees who have been with the company for more than 20 years. Walmart does have other methods for employees to reach out to management, including an anonymous employee complaint line and an internal website where workers can ask questions of executives in the company, including CEO Lee Scott. Here is today's economic report. An erosion in the wage gap between men and women should be a reason to celebrate. So why isn't anyone rejoicing? Turns out that at the same time women saw a slight uptick in wages by 3%, men saw a downtrend with an average male wage dropping by 2%. One reason cited is that there has been an increase in jobs in female-dominated fields, such as the service sector, while high-paying factory and information technology jobs, typically male-dominated, have been on the decline in the United States.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
20 minutes before the hour, head on for a Tuesday night. I'm Bob Kincaid, and you see, that's, if you were listening to the labor radio news there, Workers Independent News Service, fine folks out of Madison, Wisconsin. See, I said it right, Wisconsin. You know, you hear these wage issues. And, of course, we're going to have a, we have been promised that one of the first things we're going to do when the Democrats take over the Congress is, by God, we're going to have a raise in the minimum wage. And dare that jug-eared, pig-eyed little lout to veto it. Because when he vetoes a minimum wage increase, we will see once and for all the true, the true demonic nature of the Bush administration. Because this past Saturday, we reached a shameful historic milestone in which reached the longest period of the minimum wage in the minimum wage's existence without an increase. And you see, the minimum wage exists because the dirty, rotten, filthy rat bastards who control the money in this country could not see the common sense of paying a decent wage to somebody on an hourly basis, so they had to be compelled by law to pay a certain wage. And it is a minimum wage. It is not a living wage. The easy thing would have been to do the moral thing. But no, every time there's talk of a rise in the minimum wage, you can guarantee, as sure as God made little green apples, and little green apples go through little boys, well, all of that, you can guarantee that the United States Chamber of Commerce will appear at a blue ribbon panel hearing in Congress saying, well, you know, if you raise the minimum wage, we will have a national economic collapse, the likes of which we have never seen before. And the rise in the minimum wage comes along, and the economic collapse doesn't. And in a few years, it's time to raise the minimum wage again, and the same sorry sack of liar from the United States Chamber of Commerce comes back to Capitol Hill and said, if you raise the minimum wage, there will be an economic collapse, the likes of which has not before happened in the United States. And nobody ever just grabs him by his lapels and says, you damn liar! We've heard it all before. You have no credibility. You're a liar. You tell lies. Lying is what liars do. Quit lying about the minimum wage. Oh, if you pay working people more, we won't be able to hire anyone, and we'll have to have ghost people make all the products. Jesus. But that's why you wind up with laws. Once you're above the tribal level, where you have the occasional miscreant who steals a goat. Jesus, there's that image of Gene Wilder from Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex, or I'm in love with a sheep. Movie reference. Once you rise above the tribal stuff, you have to have laws, because generally the people who have money will not treat decently the people who don't have as much money. So let's go to the phones. We're joined by our good friend Sarge, calling from Southern Mississippi. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Man, that was a tough trip to Houston for you guys.
Yeah, well, they were a good ball club.
Yeah.
They're a good ball club. They got an offense. You just can't stop it. You can't stop it. I was looking at the chat room. This is kind of interesting. We got people from Australia, Germany, Japan, and we're all talking about gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Isn't that so?
Well, it is the, what did the ancient alchemists look for? They were looking for the universal solvent, I think. Thank you.
Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there. How you doing today? Glad to have all of you along with us here on the Guy James Show today. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network. And we've got 2 hours of talk radio coming your way. And so, we hope you'll participate. That's part of the deal, you know. I talk a while, you talk a while, we talk together, and that's what we do here. So you can give us a call at 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. We'd love to have you give us a call today. Of course, we will be discussing the Iraq Study Group today. Don't see how that we can avoid that. We're going to have a great guest coming up at 3:30, and his name is Michael Schwartz. He's a professor of sociology and a faculty director of the Undergraduate College of Global Studies at Stony Brook University, and he's written extensively on protest and insurgency as well as American business and government dynamics and all that. He's an expert on this, and you'll love to hear his opinions on the Iraq Study Group and where we're at in Iraq right now. And we'll get to that in a little while. I guess they got that study group report out right away this morning. I see it's about, 149 pages long. I promised myself I was going to read the whole thing today. Then I saw it was 149 pages long, and that, well, maybe not. But we've got the majority of it, the important parts of it down, I think, and we'll be discussing that with Michael Schwartz when he comes on around 3:30, and we'll also discuss it with you, should you decide to do so. And again, it's at 866-546-5254. It's just one of those things. We've come to the point right now in the Iraq War, and again, I call it the Bush War, where Bush's fantasy, his fantasy of going over there, and, you know, he wanted to go over there and start to all these wonderful democracies and have George Bush statues put in the city square in Tehran and Baghdad and all those places. It's not going to work out, is it? His fantasy probably ran smack into reality, and it's, maybe he beginning to understand it, but then again, maybe not. We've got terrible news from Iraq today. My God, 10 of our soldiers killed today, 27 so far in December. That's awful news, just awful news. We're on headed toward a record pace if that, on a record pace if that sticks. God, I hate to think of that, 10 today. You remember back when it was, we'd hear one or two got killed in a day, and we thought, my God, isn't that awful? Now we're hearing, it's not unusual to hear 10. Just terrible. Absolutely terrible. 10 more today. So, what else we got on here today? And we'll be discussing that all a little bit later. Oh, under the Crimea River title today, did you hear about this? You know, Steny Hoyer, the new Democratic majority leader in the House, says they're going to have the House in session now on Monday through Friday. Actually, Monday through Friday. Are you aware of the fact that right now the House meets anywhere usually late Tuesday afternoon to early Thursday afternoon? Are you aware of that they put in one full day a week and two half days a week? Did you know that? So.